This is Twa Teams One Street from the Evening Telegraph, the only podcast as obsessed with Dundee and Dundee United as you are. This week we talk Robbie Nielsen's shock departure from Dundee United, Hearts and Partick's SPFL Challenge, and Dundee's grim financial readings. Hello, I'm Callum Woodger and welcome to another edition of Twa Teams. It's episode 71 and I can assure you this one is crammed with more drama and talking points than the previous 70 combined. Joining me to dissect it all is Graham Finnan.
Hello everyone.
And Sean Hamilton.
Hello.
You're there.
We're all here.
I'm here.
Sean Hamilton. I can't say tease because I'm from Paisley. Sean Hamilton.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, Sean Hamilton.
Well, that's just one of many flaws you lot have.
Now, boys, I've had some wild weekends in my time, most of which I don't really care to discuss on this platform, but Sunday night really took the biscuit. So let's just dive straight into it. You've probably, if you're listening to this, you've probably heard the previous edition of Twa Teams and the Curious Talking Football podcast. We talked about it a bit more in depth. Robbie Nielsen's departure from Dundee United for Hearts, of course, is what I'm talking about here. But Graham and Sean, you weren't involved in that podcast. So instant reactions on Sunday night or Monday when you heard it, what were they?
Well, I'll start. I was a real stunner. I mean, I was working on Monday's telly. And I was in constant touch with the writer who was in on Sunday, who was Ian Roach, and he'd finished for the day. He says, "That's it. I'm off. Everything's nice. I'll see you tomorrow." So this was round about 5 o'clock. So I was putting the pages together and thought, this is going to be a nice quiet evening. Everything's going to plan. Within 10 minutes, Roacher was back on saying, "Wait a minute. There's talk that Hearts are interested in taking Robbie Nielsen." And I thought, here we go. So... we had a wee discussion and we were trying to figure out the plan of action, but everything moved so quickly. It was a real, you know, sometimes these things happen and you get the first gambit, you get Hearts interested, so that would be in the paper, and then the follow-up would be United trying to keep their manager. But everything was done and dusted in the space of 3 hours on a Sunday night, and it was a real scramble on Sunday night for myself and for the guys who were actually involved in working on the papers. But a real shock, and a real blow for Dundee United.
Similarly, Bear, I was off on Sunday, having done a 6 day week the week before, so I was just like you.
Exactly,
I was
kind
of looking forward to a peaceful Sunday evening, and then all of a sudden, this situation presents itself. And as you say, there's several different elements to it from our point of view, because as you say, first of all, Hearts could be interested in Robbie, and then it shifts on pretty quickly to there's been an approach, and then there's been an approach knocked back, and every single individual element of that all the way through would have been a story in and of itself. So within the space of about 2.5 hours from five to about back of seven or something like that, you've gone from nothing to Robbie Nielsen's gone to Hearts, and it was an incredibly sort of sudden chain of it, well, a sudden spark, and then the chain of events was so rapid after that, and it's quite remarkable really that it all got done away from the public eye, and then it only came out when it was pretty much done, you know. So I was absolutely shocked. That was my reaction on the Sunday night, not least because it pure ruined my night, man. I wasn't happy.
You'd already cracked open beer number 6 by that point.
I'm telling you, it was Father's Day. I was on the tins. I was ready to watch the Liverpool game. I was settling in, ready to get the Liverpool game on, and that was it. Ruined.
Selfish.
I'll teach you to leave your phone on a Sunday night, Sean. That's it. There's a lesson for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's been many reasons and theories that have come out as to why this move happened and why it happened so quickly, but do you think it's simply just a case of Robbie wanting to return to Hearts and Hearts wanting him back at the club? A simple approach like that, or do you think there was more unrest behind the scenes involved?
I think there might be more than that to it, Callum. Sadly, I think there is. We're talking about a man here who's just won promotion with the club he's at. You're looking forward to playing in the Premier League with that club. The club he's moved to are officially in the Championship. why would he suddenly jump ship? Now, I know there is a link, obviously, with Robbie. He's been boss at Hearts before, and you could feel he certainly has feelings for the club. But why you felt he had to move and move so quickly without even giving Dundee United the chance to really sort of, you know, coax him into staying. I mean, maybe they did do that, but everything happened so quickly. I do feel that there are other things going on behind the scenes, but we're certainly not privy to them at the moment. But I do feel it was strange the way he just up sticks very quickly and left.
Craig Levein sort of suggested that this move was maybe preordained from his time at the club, that even back in sort of late last year, early this year, the Jambos were looking at getting Robbie back to the club. Do you think that's a possibility, that he's been seen as a long term kind of strategy to get him back?
Possibly. I mean, I don't doubt for a second that Levein will have had regular conversations with Robbie over the years, and I also don't doubt that Robbie, having left Hearts all those years ago to go down south to MK Dons, I mean, he'll say that he's a better manager for the experience, but he left Hearts when they were second in the table, and it's been pretty grim for them since, by their standards. Yep. I mean, so there's almost certainly a feeling of kind of unfinished business on his part with Hearts, and similarly, there would be a desire to probably just wipe out the last 5 years or whatever since Robbie left, and just start again somehow with him in charge, because he did do such a good job last time. While obviously there's lots of talk about what are the prevailing circumstances at United that have led to Robbie feeling that he wants to go, and I mean, certainly there may be things going on there. He may have certain feelings about where the club is or the position it's in, but at the same time, I don't think you can downplay the emotional side of it for Robbie, because Hearts are his club. It really is that simple. He's got a massive connection with that football club. So if the opportunity presented itself, then I mean, United fans won't like to think of it, particularly since Hearts could be in the Championship. But Hearts are his club. So, I mean, I can understand why he would want to go. And they're a big club as well.
Yeah, from that point of view, certainly it is an understandable decision. But the players, Graham, they must have been stunned by this, the fact that they were only 1 week back into pre-season training, and then over the course of a few hours, seemingly in one night, their manager's away, and it's Lee McCulloch and Gordon Forrest who are now taking the training. The players must be really, as much as the fans and everyone else, looking for a resolution before the season starts.
You're absolutely right. I mean, while this is all going on in the background, you've got to remember the season's due to start in about 5 or 6 weeks' time. And it puts United in a real sort of spot of bother. They need to find a manager and find a manager quickly. We all remember when United, the SPFL, called time on the Championship and United were crowned champions. Everyone saw the picture of Tony Asgard and Robbie Nielsen together having a celebratory bottle of beer. I mean, that's only a few weeks ago in itself.
That's right, forgot about that.
You know, but all the stuff we've done in the paper has all been, we're looking forward to this big party at Tannadice when we can get back and celebrate that Championship win. And the man who guided them to the Championship, he ain't going to be there.
Yeah, it's strange. I've sort of made this point as well, that maybe since the turn of the year, things have unravelled ever so slightly at United, and it's just progressively picked up pace. I mean, at first it was simply just the form is a wee bit off. Then you start hearing things in the background, disputes between the fan groups and the club, which we are assured is now being resolved. You know, Mal Branigan leaving, Robbie leaving now. The shift has very quickly gone from we're going for top six, we're going for Europe, we're going to get this club back to where we feel it belongs, to where on the earth are we even going now? It's a strange situation, and the one they're going to have to get sorted very, very quickly.
If there was harmony, it wouldn't be Scottish football. It doesn't work like that in Scotland with anything. Yeah, it's surprising. Very surprising. It's one of the biggest shocks I can remember for a long time in Scottish football, certainly in the city of Discovery, in terms of managers coming and going, players coming and going, for when that happened on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's it's one of these ones where the precedent sort of been set, the expectations now there from the fans because of things Robbie was saying, because of things Mel Branigan was saying, for the club to go on in next season to achieve these things. But whoever comes in now might have different ideas about what the group's capable of, about who he's bringing in, about the strength of his squad is going to be. It's really flipped everything on its head from my point of view. But some of the names in the frame, we've heard Tommy Wright, we've heard Craig Levein, Lee McCulloch, who's obviously there at the moment, Stephen Glass is one who's emerged, and Bear, absolute scoop of the century if this comes off, Jens Lehmann. What a shout that is. Who do we think is going to get it? But first, Bear, tell us a little bit more about Jens Lehmann and his link with Dundee United.
Well, I'm going to put my Chris McLaughlin, BBC Sport head on here in BBC Scotland and say, Tilly Sport understands. No, Jens Lehmann's name was among several foreign coaches who were forwarded to Dundee United in the context of they wanted to be considered for the manager's position. Dundee United have his name, but it's our understanding that this time, at this point in time, Dundee United are obviously more inclined to opt for a British and possibly a manager with Scottish knowledge, put it that way, of the Scottish game. You know, I think these names have gone into the recruitment process, but it's unlikely at this point United would consider appointing a foreign manager, and I think that's probably a wise move. But Jens Lehmann was certainly a name put forward to them.
That's a shame, that, because that's what Scottish football needs. Never mind all these boys who know the league and all. Just give us big, bonkers German former goalies who don't have a clue.
Just a banter appointment.
Come on.
Oh, he's a big lad.
Let them loose. Let them loose.
I thought it was a goalkeepers union. I thought it was like from your monthly emails you all send to each other. And,
No. He's a wee bit further up the tree than me, and earned far more money than me, I've got to say. But his name was amongst, as I say, several foreign coaches put up for United. So we'll see where it progresses to.
It's a good bit of reporting, Bear. You should really consider doing this for a living, to be fair. Very good. Sean,
if only it was true, Callum.
All the best stories are a little bit fabricated, aren't they? Sean, from your point of view, who would you like to see come in at Tannadice? Would Tommy Wright be the main man for you?
Who would I like to see? Like is an interesting word. Obviously, I'm not a United fan. I don't have any particular emotional connection to the club, but beyond the professional one, I've covered them for a lot of years, and you naturally sort of build up an affinity and the missus is a United fan and all that. So who would I like to see at United?
You're in trouble if you don't pick the right person here.
I know. I think it depends on what happens with Northern Ireland, because who I think is the best guy who's available to do the job at the moment is Tommy Wright. Mm-hmm. And I don't. He's there. And if he doesn't get the Northern Ireland job, for me, it's a no-brainer if he would take it. That's the other question, but his track record is unquestionable, and he would come in and he would give United as great a shout as anybody else could to actually meet the standards that they've kind of been talking about over the last few months, top six trophies, whatever. He's done it with St Johnstone year after year, so Tommy Wright, I think, is the right man for it. I kind of half wonder about Stephen Robinson as well, you know, and I know that seems like a complete left field thing, but hey, if he doesn't get the Northern Ireland job, why don't United go and ask the question?
Yeah, so
show a bit of ambition.
Yeah, it's a bigger club to move from Motherwell to Dundee United. I think everyone would agree that, even though the Well have had some good success in the last couple of years, but he might see it as a good step in his career. So no, I don't think it's a completely bonkers suggestion.
Yeah.
Certainly no more or less bonkers than Jens Lehmann. So,
well, you know what? I'd put my business head on here. We're currently in a pandemic. People are losing their jobs. There's a good chance that the country will go into a recession. Lee McCulloch, in this instance, would save Dundee United a wage. And he does. He's a man who has Premier League experience and you know, being a manager with Kilmarnock. Obviously, I don't think the fans would be too pleased with that. But if you're talking about Dundee United as a club, like every club across the land that are looking to cut jobs, then there you are. There's one straight away. And I mean, we don't know what Robbie Nielsen was earning every year, but it would have been, wouldn't have been an insignificant figure. So you've got a man like Lee McCulloch who knows the players, he's been there for a while, you know, and you've got Gordon Forrest behind him. Why not give him a go and see where you go from there? Tommy Wright would be a great man to have, but Tommy Wright won't be cheap.
No, he won't.
No,
let's be honest. He will want proper wages to come to Tannery. So, you know, Lee McCulloch at this point in time, I know that won't be many United supporters' first pick, but he's a man, as I say, he knows the squad, he knows what he's got available, he knows the setup, he works quite well with Tony Asgard and how things go there, and you know you're going to save a lot of money.
Yeah, I think the main point you make there towards the end is the relationship that McCulloch has with Asgard. I think whoever comes in to this role is going to have to strike up a relationship very quickly or have a pre-existing relationship with Tony Asgard as the sporting director to sort of be able to work together and push forward to achieve what they want to achieve as a whole club, not just what the manager wants to achieve. I think Asgard would like to have someone he could maybe mould a younger manager, a coach more than a manager, whereas of the likes of a Tommy Wright, a Craig Levein would come in and I would imagine wanting to have more of a control and more of a say over the kind of football department, if you want to call it that. So I would not be surprised if Lee McCulloch ends up leading the Tangerines out on August the 1st.
Aye. The one thing I would say is in relation to guys like Tommy Wright and Craig Levein as well, I think you're spot on. They absolutely will want control over more, or certainly a lot of control over the football mm-hmm. department and the club. They'll want to have a lot of input into signings and stuff like that, just because of their experience and their age.
It's almost like their era. That's how they did things.
It's a generational thing, isn't it? So they'll definitely want more control over that side of it. But in terms of having relationships with Tony Asgard, both of those guys will have dealt with Tony Asgard before from his days as an agent. So it's not like they would be going into that situation cold and not having a relationship with him, because I suspect they both know him. I mean, not well, but I'm sure they've dealt with him on a number of occasions.
Yeah, and this is an opportunity for this new regime at Dundee United, led by American owner Mark Ogren, to appoint their own man. That's what the DUSF have came out and said this week, that to see the positive from Robbie leaving the club is a chance now for to get everyone singing off the same hymn sheet and getting, if that was a problem, to get them all on the right page and moving forward for the betterment of the club. I mean, this is a big test of his ownership, isn't it? Who he brings in and who the whole kind of hierarchy bring in.
Yeah, I mean, he's been pretty quiet, I've got to say, in recent times. Tony Asgard has been sort of fronting this up, as you would expect. But maybe given the seriousness of the situation, we might have heard a wee bit more from Mark Ogren. To be fair to DUSF, they did thank Robbie for doing what he was paid to do, which was to get Dundee United out of the Championship, and they said that, you know, they wished him well. But also they did point out that he was actually appointed by the former chairman. Was it Mike Miller, the former chairman? Mike Martin. He wasn't really Mark Ogren's man as such. So Mark Ogren can now appoint, if they are going to, you know, look outside the club for a new manager, Mark Ogren can appoint someone who, you know, backs his vision for the way what he's got for going ahead. So maybe that could be a good thing. It could be, as in the DUSF words, it was a blessing in disguise.
There's another example of how I can't pronounce my T's. Mike Martin.
Mike Martin.
Martin.
Mike Martin.
Martin. Martin.
Yes. I don't pronounce T's either. Martin. See, I don't know anybody who pronounces their T's. I don't trust people who pronounce their T's. That's a weird
There's
habit.
Some words that I pronounce my T's in. Some swear words with a lot of emphasis that I pronounce my T's in. Yeah, very much so.
Mm-hmm. I can think of one right now.
Can you? Good.
Yeah, yeah.
I can think of a couple, actually.
And I'm picturing you while I do it.
Yeah. On the pitch, Ian Harkes has signed a new deal until 2022 at Dundee United. Is that a good move for the club, do you think? I think there's maybe a little bit more to come from him.
Good bit of business. I think he's done well. I think he needs to step up. I think he's got potential. he's done well in the Championship, but the Premiership will be a whole new ball game. I mean, you really need to see what he's made of. Hopefully, he will, you know, take it on. I'm still not 100% convinced he's got what it takes to break into international football. I think that's where he'd like to be, but hopefully he can. I mean, you know, all good players rise to the occasion, so we'll see next season. But a good bit of business. I think it was good to get him tied up, certainly.
Yeah, I just think he's got a magnificent haircut. I think he should get a new deal for that alone. So
I think everybody's got magnificent hair next season. I mean, see everybody. Until the hairdresser's open, everybody's got magnificent hair at the moment.
I don't. I let the missus cut my hair the other day. This is serious.
No,
I did. This is the first time during lockdown. I thought it was getting so bad, man. It was like Grizzly Adams. It was getting really, really bad with the beard and everything. So I thought I'll let her have a go at it. So she did it, and suffice to say, she immediately bought me a hat.
Absolutely bottled it.
Right.
So that tells you everything.
I look like I've been. I look like I've been dive bombed by a helicopter. I tried to do my own hair with a pair of clippers, which was just a disaster. So the barbers are getting big tips when they come back next month, supposedly.
By the way, those guys are going to have when they see all these boys coming in with their home haircuts and all that.
Shocking.
When are they opening? The 15th? 15th of July or something, is it?
Something like that, I think, yeah.
fingers crossed.
Okay. Moving on from one dispute or piece of drama involving Dundee United and Hearts to another. Yes, this is of course the news that Hearts and Partick Thistle have lodged a legal challenge to the Court of Session against the SPFL, disputing their own relegations and the promotions of Dundee United, the Raith Rovers and Cove Rangers. This has kind of been going on in the background for a little bit. Hearts trying to find a way to keep themselves in the top flight. Partick trying to find a way to keep themselves in the Championship, and now it's all coming round full circle, and they're preparing for the Premiership now. But Dundee United now have had to very quickly lodge a defence against this petition that's been put out to them. It's an absolutely stunning story amid everything else that's going on in Scottish football right now, isn't it?
Well, I've got to say, I mean, I've worked in DC Thompson's for 40 years and they've kindly paid my wage every week for 40 years, which is damn grueling. But I only get paid a fraction, I would imagine, of what the likes of Neil Doncaster gets at the SPFL.
You'd imagine. Now,
I saw this coming. Everybody in Scottish football, Hearts have been saying it and Budge has been saying it for weeks, months now, that if there was no reconstruction, the likelihood was they would go down the legal route and would take the SPFL to court. Now, SPFL seem to be caught by surprise by this. Now, the problem we've got is every team in the SPFL now are looking at this and going, what if Hearts go to court and win this? They're looking for $8 million in compensation and Partick are looking for $2 million. How are we going to pay that? So they really are, they've got a decision to make now. Do they go back to the reconstruction thing? Because I think that could be a way out of this, if they get their heads around the table. And it's a sad state of affairs for Scottish football at a time when money is so tight that we're pulling money into lawyers' pockets. You know, it's an absolute disgrace, and I think it's been handled very poorly by the SPFL. You know, and I think Neil Doncaster's got a lot to answer for. They've got themselves into a real position now where there must be genuine concerns that they could go to court and lose a court case and it would cost them big time. Or the season could be delayed, and as we're talking broadcast deals, the whole shebang is up in the air here. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to have to get this sorted out pretty quickly.
Yeah, the argument is that the initial resolution to call the season was handled poorly and it was unfair, and that the SPFL sort of withheld some information. And when you do read through the petition, like most of us have, it's... You must, Neil Doncaster and the SPFL must be concerned that Hearts and Partick could actually have a case here.
They better have their ducks in a row, for sure. Because if they don't, they're in trouble. And I mean, Doncaster, as far as I'm concerned, his job's on the line here.
Yeah.
In terms of like a court case and what have you, it's not even so much that initially. The initial fear is that the Court of Session looks at the petition and at the answers submitted by the SPFL and the other respondents, of which Dundee United and Cove Rangers and Raith Rovers are named. Mm-hmm. All the court session has to do to issue an injunction that will essentially prevent promotion and relegation, and will therefore have an impact on the start of the season on the 1st of August, is to look at it and say there could be a case to answer here and we should hear it. That's all they have to do. They don't have to hear the case. All they have to do is think there could be a case.
And that looks a distinct possibility as well. There's nothing in that to suggest that isn't the case. There's clearly something there.
Well, there is, but
for Hearts and Partick to have gone this far in challenge.
I read Hearts and Thistle's petition the other day. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I would make a terrible lawyer because I was reading it going, yeah, that sounds right. So, I mean, if I was Dundee United's lawyer, I'd be reading that going, oh, well, fair enough, we'll just stay down, lads.
We're humped.
I'm far too suggestible. But, I mean, it genuinely, I don't think there's any question that Hearts and Thistle have been wronged by this. And, yeah, you can say, oh, 80% of the league voted for the resolution. But, I mean, if Hearts can prove that there was wrongdoing in relation to the running of that vote, mm-hmm. then it's curtains for Doncaster. It has to be.
And it's not just United that are still sort of involved in this. Dundee are also involved in this, courtesy of their vote. Uh-huh. In that resolution, it's amazing that we're, three months down the line from the league shutting down, that our clubs are still so heavily in the thick of this, and United are back playing football in 6 weeks. It's just an unbelievable saga that seems to just keep dragging out and dragging out.
Callum, we're no experts. I think everyone would be in agreement with that. That's a fact.
On anything.
We're no experts on anything. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But when you look at the case, Sean's right. You do start going, even though you're not a lawyer, you do start going, well, actually, you know, that both these clubs or the clubs involved do have a case here. Now, surely Neil Doncaster's got to get the SPFL clubs together and say, okay, we're going to fight this in court, but there is a chance that we could lose, and we could lose a lot of money on the back of this. And clubs have to be aware of that, and they have to make a decision from that point and say, well, how do we get ourselves out of this? And the only way to do that I can see at this point in time is get back around the table, get the reconstruction thing going. The model 14-10-10-10 has been knocked back, but I'm sure if it comes to that, or the prospect of losing 10 million in a court case, you know, which would ruin Scottish football, surely the clubs have got to get their heads together and say, right, let's get it done and let's move on, for goodness sake.
Yeah, you would like to think that differences in personal interest would be put aside at that point, because there is clearly a solution there that might not be perfect in terms of financially, and it doesn't even have to be a permanent fix. It could be a short-term fix that we do shuffle the league so that nobody is left in a worse-off position, because it is unfair. I mean, you look at, I think it was Partick in particular, they had a game in hand on Queen of the South, who were, I think, 2 points or 3 points above them when the season ended. It could have easily been Queen of the South who were in that position. It just so happened that, you know, for whatever reason, a game was called off, and Partick have now been relegated to League One, essentially. It's madness, really, isn't it? It's only Scottish football. You think that with that, the benefit of it going to the court session is maybe it does have eyes on the outside of this crazy kind of goldfish bowl that we all operate in, us included, to look at it from a more kind of objective point of view, rather than it being marred and skewed by opinions and beliefs. But we need to move on from this and get back to the football, because you see leagues all over the world continuing with their game, and it might not be perfect, but they're getting football. I mean, we all miss it. We don't want to carry on with this nonsense anymore, do we?
No, I think that's part of the problem the SPFL have got now, that the other leagues have kicked off, and particularly England, because we're so close to it. It's on our doorstep and we get all the coverage of it. We're seeing games happening. We're seeing the season being finished down there, and a lot of people are looking at it. And all right, the circumstances are different for clubs up here, but a lot of people will be looking at that and going, well, why couldn't we have just done that? Why couldn't we have hung on for a wee while and then finished the season off? So that would certainly be Hearts' argument, because if they'd done that and then they'd gone down, they wouldn't have had any case whatsoever. Mm. And by the way, I reckon they probably would have gone down because they were hopeless.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt that they probably would have gone down, and, you know, Partick may have gone down. Stranraer probably would have gone down given their position in League One. But it's the not knowing that's the problem. You don't know what was going to happen. And to be fair to the SPFL, they didn't know what was going to happen either in terms of how bad the coronavirus would get. It seems to be on the wane due to the measures that have been put in place. Could we have had the season finished in July or August? Maybe now with the benefit of hindsight, we could have. But at the time, you just don't know that. I think what really rankles with them is the initial vote and the lack of a willingness from the other clubs to put through reconstruction and from their point of view to save the clubs. I think they feel cheated and hard done by and they're probably right to feel that way.
No, I think you're right. I think they're entitled to that. But I mean, in terms of getting it sorted, I think the court thing has been a last resort. I'm sure they didn't want to go to court, but they kind of felt that they had no choice. And see, as a bargaining chip, they said, well, if this continues as is and there's no change, then we want £8 million and Thistle want two. That's a way to make the self-interest that every individual club has been fueled by through this a collective issue. Because if you say to the SPFL, well, if you don't sort this out and we go down, you're due us, like, total, you're due us £10 million, that becomes the club's problem. So you've brought all those clubs together now. Their individual self-interest becomes a collective self-interest to not pay this £10 million. So you may well find that if the court of session looks at it and goes, right, there's a case here, injunction, pretty quickly, I think we'll find that reconstruction comes back on the table and we'll find Hearts are in the Premiership.
I mean,
and Thistle are in the Championship.
Yeah, that's £10 million in total. That's the entire prize money for the whole league, I think, the whole 42 clubs over the course of a season. It's how they would even begin to find that money in these times as well is a big question. And the clubs are scrambling about, struggling to survive at the very lowest levels of our game. Nothing's really been said of leagues one and two and what's going to happen with them. It's depriving them even more as well, that the SPFL will be less able to help them and bail them out until there is a point that we can return. It's it continues to be, as much as we have a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel with these restart dates, it continues to be a very scary and treacherous kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean Sean, maybe you could answer, when will the court make a decision on an injunction? I take it that's got to happen pretty damn quick.
I genuinely don't know, Bill, the answer. I'm not sure. Not being a court reporter, never having done work in the court of session, I don't know how quickly these things move.
Because it's just the fixtures I think are due out in the next 2 to 3 weeks, which they will have to be, obviously, because you know the league's due to start on August 1. Now surely they can't issue fixtures with this in the background.
Well,
it would just be a waste of time.
I don't know the exact answer, but if the timetable so far is anything to go by, I tend to think it'll probably move quickly, because after the initial petition was submitted to the court of session, the respondents had 7 days to respond, didn't they?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it's a week turnaround, you would imagine another week, maybe.
Similar sort of thing,
For the court of session to assess both sides of the argument and decide whether they see that there's a case there.
Well, the defences have been lodged now as well, haven't they? So I'm sure they'll be looked over and considered before it's then moved on to more legal
Quick in legal terms is not the same as quick in any other terms, because these lawyers have got to earn their hourly rates, you know.
Yeah, well, having read through the petition myself yesterday, I know I wish I'd kind of paid a bit more attention to the law class in uni, because I had no idea half the stuff that I was reading, some of the verbatim terms, some of the Latin terms. I was constantly looking for.
When I got to page 114 column, I sort of switched off, I've got to say. I'd had enough by that point.
Moving on to some more serious matters with our other city club, Dundee. We've got no football on the horizon at Dens Park until October 17, so what we are mainly going to be focusing on is matters off the field. The club last week released a kind of grim financial statement amid the coronavirus crisis, talking about the impact of that on them in terms of their coffers, and John Nelms, the managing director, is coming out saying that there's tough choices needing to be made, and it seems that, unfortunately, and probably inevitably, there's going to be cost-cutting measures put in place by the Dark Blues. That's got to be a big concern for the club, doesn't
Absolutely. I mean, but it's not just Dundee. It's across the whole game. It's a position we find ourselves in. John Elm says there's going to be tough choices, and there will be, and not just obviously with the playing staff, the entire staff at Dens Park, you know, in the offices and the ground staff, etc. You know, everybody must be concerned. And obviously, the sad thing is that obviously we've had experience of this before. We've done the sadly twice in administration since the turn of the millennium. And the people that suffer the most, I've got to say, are the kids. They are normally the first people. They'll concentrate on the first team. Any sort of money they've got will be to put some sort of team onto that park. We don't know what the budget will be, but sadly, you will find that the younger kids will be let go. Some that maybe had potential will not get the chance at Dundee, and that's a real sad thing. And it'll be unfortunate. The first thing is there's not going to be areas for them to drop into because times are tough. You know, it's going to be really tough. And boys like, you know, Finn Robertson, he managed to come through the academy. Now, sadly, there could be another one or two Finn Robertsons in there who might not get the chance to make the break. And that's a real sad thing. But I think John Nelms is right when he says tough choices ahead. Tough choices for everyone in Scottish football.
Yeah, £500,000 losses recorded already, Sean. Something has to be done, doesn't it, to get the club through until they can get income coming back in via gate money and hospitality and whatever else.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, and it's not. I don't want to reach back too far, but I mean, you kind of have to. You look at what was it? 7 years that Football Partners Scotland have owned the club.
Yeah, it's around about that. Yeah,
now. Is that right? Seven years.
Yeah.
I think they've. Am I right in saying they've lost money every year, or have they made a small profit on one of them?
No, I mean it's running the millions now that they've pumped in. Yeah.
Yeah, they've certainly lost a lot of money out of it. It hasn't been a moneymaker for them at any time. So you, a crisis like this strikes and all of a sudden what might have been a modest loss becomes a colossal one. And that's a nightmare scenario. And then because I guarantee you the other thing, the business world at large beyond football has been affected badly by this crisis as well. So the money man, Tim Keyes, his family businesses have been affected by this at home as well. So under those circumstances, if you've got an investment in another country that has been consistently losing money and has now lost £500,000, as you say, that's dodgy ground, really. You'd be tempted to look at that and go, nah. I mean, I certainly would. But they're doing the right thing by having these, by being open about the tough choices that they've got to confront and the difficult conversations that will follow, because that's the sensible way to run the club at this point, because they've got no money coming in.
No. I spoke to the manager, James McPake, this morning, and he said, oh, it's obviously not ideal, it's not nice, that the idea of people who've been there for years, not even just the you know, not talking players here, talking people behind the scenes, potentially losing their jobs. But it's a realistic statement. It's a transparent statement. It's clear. It is good communication. It's the board being honest with the fans. And the one thing you have to give credit to John Nelms and Tim Keyes and Football Partners Scotland is they could have jumped ship quite easily.
Their commitment from when they came in up to now is absolutely unquestionable.
Oh yeah, it's
you cannot knock them for that.
No, particularly the last few years have been very tough on and off the field, and they're still there. It would have been very easy for them, like I say, just to pack their bags and just head off and cut their losses, because they are huge losses. But they're not. They're still there, and without them, they're. Who else takes on that club? Who else is there to be custodians of the club for the fans? These measures, unfortunately, are almost certainly necessary. We just hope that it's not too late and it is enough for Dundee to continue to be competitive next season, because they're going to go into a very difficult, however it looks, a very difficult championship again next season.
As long as the Keyes family remain there, Dundee will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. So you can't knock their commitment. They've never given any indication that they're wanting out. They've always said we're here for the long haul. So there's no reason to doubt that whatsoever. And what I was saying earlier was purely just an assessment of how I see it from a business perspective, because it has been a loser for them. There's no dressing that up. So the point now is that while the business is facing tough times, as long as they're there, it will be okay. So you have to hope that their commitment continues. That's all.
Yeah, and they're not the only ones, are they?
No. I mean, but just to go on to Tim Keyes and the Keyes family, they brought stability at Dundee Football Club they hadn't had for 25 years prior to that. You know, Dundee had always been, talk of, financial struggles, which most clubs in Scotland are, but Dundee suffered. Obviously, we've seen two administrations. For the last 7 years, Tim Keyes and John Nelms, he's the man, on the ground at Dens, Dundee have been, it appears certainly, have been run pretty prudently, and Sean's absolutely right. They've not been making money. They've been losing money. But the reason they're still here is purely down to the Keyes family. And that's a commitment that they've given to the club. And I'm sure that commitment will carry on. I hope it does. But there's no denying that we're going to see cuts all across the board at Dens Park in terms of the size of the squad, in terms of the size of the staff they've got. And unfortunately, people are going to lose their jobs. And that's a fact of life, not just in football, but across society in general in Scotland. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see where it goes over the next 6 months or so.
Away from the club, former Dundee manager Jim Duffy had a heart attack over the weekend and was laid up in hospital. He's now, we understand, back home with his family, recovering well. But we all, from Twa Teams One Street, from Evening Telegraph to Courier and DC Thompson, want to send our best wishes out to Jim Duffy and his family. Quite the shock and the scare for him. For a fit guy, by all accounts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jim's a teetotal guy. He doesn't smoke, so it was a real shock when we heard that. But he appears to be on the mend. He's a brilliant boy. He was a brilliant boy to deal with in the press during his time at Dundee. He was a fantastic player at Dens Park. So, we'll send them our best wishes from Twa Teams One Street. I'm sure the majority of fans are all the fans in the city, but on both sides of the street. He was a well-respected figure in the city. So, yeah, get well soon, Jim.
You'll know better than me, Bear, because I didn't move to Dundee until, 2003? Mm-hmm. I think so. He was long since past. His playing days were finished then. But yeah. What was he like? What was he like as a player at his best?
Oh, he was terrific. I mean, he was a sweeper. Played in behind the centre half, and he never had fantastic pace, but he could read a game. He could read a game, and he was always in the right place at the right time, making the crucial challenges when the centre half couldn't get that. Jim Duffy could get that, but he was more than that. He was also a leader on the park. You saw that, other players respected him, and that's why he went into management. And he's fondly remembered it. He's been at Dundee as manager two or three times, I think. Now I'm not quite sure, but he's fondly remembered. Every manager goes through rough patches, and he left to go to Hibs, I think, in one of them, and he's still effectively a legend at Dens. So, yeah, he was unfortunate. Again, he's another one of these guys. There was more to come from Jim Duffy, but he suffered a terrible injury at Ibrox, and he never really, he came back, he made a comeback, but he never really quite got back to the standard that he was before. And he was in a position where he could have went on and done even better. I mean, and it might not have been at Dundee, he might have moved on, to bigger clubs beyond that. So maybe that was a good thing for Dundee. But actually, he spent his best years at Dens. But a great guy on and off the park.
Yeah, I spoke to Bobby Glennie this week, who would have been his kind of defensive partner and then the sort of late 80s when Jim was playing for the club. And he said the same, kind of echoed your sentiments there, Bear, to say that he was a very underrated player, actually, in terms of being a footballer and being good on the ball. Sweeping up and being a tidy sort of player, where Glennie would go in all guns blazing and stick his head in there. That Duff was there to sort of clean up, and maybe not blessed with the most pace in the world, but a terrific organiser, read the game,
Callum,
talker on the park.
Callum, the reason I think he may have been underrated at the time is because you had players like Wally Miller up at Aberdeen, mm-hmm. and you had players like Dave Neary over at Tannadice, outstanding, you know. So, you know, you can't say just how good these guys were. Jim Duffy was up there as well, you know, but he probably went under the radar because Dundee at the time weren't probably, you know, quite as good as these teams that Miller was playing in up at Aberdeen and Neary was playing in at Tannadice. So you didn't see so much of Jim Duffy, but he certainly had terrific ability. There's no doubt about that.
Yep, he's a fighter, as we've heard, so I'm sure he'll hopefully be making a speedy recovery back in the dugout. Of course, he's still the manager at Dumbarton, so hopefully next season when League One football comes back, we'll see Duff back in the dugout looking fit and well again. So, yes, all the best from us. Looking ahead to next season again, if Hearts do end up in the Championship, it'll be Robbie against McPake again. It'll be sick of the sight of him.
It's a bit ironic, isn't it? if that happens, you know, and there's a good chance it possibly will. You know, I mean, the one thing I'd be worried about if I was James McPake, if Robbie's back in the Championship, he is a course and distance winner in the Championship. You know, he's got two titles under his belt. But maybe that's not such a bad thing. Everybody will be looking at him and Hearts and expecting him to go and romp it. James McPake is a young, up-and-coming manager. He improved last season. He's moving in the right direction. I would expect him to improve again this season. Well, obviously, you've got to take into account the restrictions that not just Dundee are under, but football will be under. But in his managerial skills, he admitted he made mistakes last season. Not everyone makes mistakes, but he saw the mistakes that he's made, and he rectified them. And Dundee, as I've said before, unfortunately for them, were probably playing their best football when the virus struck and we had the shutdown. Dundee were moving in the right direction. That's why it's, you know, Dundee have got a case as well. When, you know, when things stopped, they were a wee bit behind, but they were making their run. You know, and the best horse always makes its run at the right time. You get to the winning post at right on time. And Dundee were looking as though they might have done that. They certainly would have made it into the playoffs. They'd already beaten Ayr United, a team who were also looking like they were going to be in the playoffs twice. Sorry, they drew them down at Ayr, beat them at Dens quite comfortably that night at Dens before it was shut. So the shutdown. So no, I think that James McPake can certainly look forward to the new season with a bit of optimism.
Be looking to kind of prove himself in his second season, Sean.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, here on Nielsen though. Do you not think you'll get a standing ovation at Dens for doing the dirty on United?
Well, I thought about 5 minutes.
Exactly. I was going to say that is until the game starts and they're 2-0 down or whatever. So, yeah.
Well, that's it. No, yeah, McPake, it's a big season for him, certainly, as a manager. It'll be a big one for Dundee again, but that said, everyone will be while they're in the Championship, really, because it's not a league they want to be in. If Hearts are there, I tend to think that we might not see Hearts in that division next season now. And I know we're getting closer to it, and I know the timescales are getting tighter, but I still think they'll find a way to work this reconstruction. I don't think we'll see Hearts in the Championship. And by the way, that'll be great for Dundee if it goes like that.
There you go. That's just about all we've got time for here on Twa Teams. Sean, Graham, thanks very much, and we'll see you next week.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it. Or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people find Twa Teams One Street, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget to pick up your copy of The Tilly Monday to Saturday for all the latest from Dens and Tannadice, or go to thetilly.co.uk to find out how you can get the paper delivered right to your door.